Tech32 is a business cooperative that makes it easier for business owners to have the life that they dreamed of when they first started their businesses. Members access a suite of high-quality services to assist them with all things business. The planning, advertising, marketing, training, networking, branding, and of course their public voice. One of these services is District 32 Radio. Welcome, I'm Jackie Campbell, and I hope you're ready to listen and learn as another one of our fabulous members shares their stories with you. Well, every so often, you come across someone who not only identifies a problem, but then decides that he's not going to wait for anybody else to solve it. He's going to get in there and do it himself. When it comes to healthcare, this can be so, so difficult and just seem like such an overwhelming problem, like many of the problems that we have in business. But I've met a gentleman, Samir Purohit, from Insight Business Services, who is doing exactly this.
Hi, good afternoon, Jackie.
Great, now we found the right room in the building, which is always good, bit of a complication at the start, but that's business, isn't it? So tell me, Insight Business Services, is this something you just woke up one morning, you've trained all your life to provide these sorts of services?
So I come from a financial business decision-making background.
Okay.
As you can tell from my accent, I'm really true blue Aussie. I've been here for 10 years and I'm from the UK originally.
Right.
So I've got a background in supporting business decision-making for large blue chip organisations. So some of the larger organisations globally, so the BHPs, the Vodafones, etc., etc.
Okay. So what does supporting financial decisions of blue chip companies actually mean? Sorry, for those of us who aren't in the know.
It's really the bare bones. Who are we as an organisation, the strategy for those organisations, the planning, but also making it happen. So what are those organisations doing and how do they actually make it happen? So the operational side.
So is that like the long term, we think the iron ore price, for example, is going to go down by $3 a tonne in the future. What can we do between now and then to make sure that we don't have to fire everybody?
Correct. So looking at those business improvement ideas, looking at the operational overall, and then seeing where there's some smart savings can be made. So that's what my background has been for a long time. And it's funny that you talk about iron ore. Prior to this, I used to work for a company called Roy Hill, which is a Mrs. Reinhardt company.
I know dear Gina very well. Being an ex-geologist myself and working for Rio for a number of years, we worked on both Roy Hill and also with Hope Downs with the family. But how's that for a businesswoman who's really taken a start and done something amazing with it?
And also the attitude that she had, and I'll tell you a small story on that. I joined 5 years ago at Roy Hill, and the office was very small. The dream was to build a mine site, a processing plant, a railway line for 400 k's, and a port facility. Now, to build that would cost $10 billion US. Over a two-year period, I was part of a finance team where we met with a number of Asian banks and were able to secure over a two-year period with the support of Mrs. Reinhardt and a number of leaders in the WA and Australian community, were able to secure that funding from Asian banks for $10 billion.
So, just to be clear, that was 10 billion with a B.
Yeah, and US. So we're not talking Aussie here. So we're talking a bit slightly more than that. So, you know,
that's a huge amount of money to come up with.
It is. And look, you know, as business owners, we know how much time we have to put in. That was serious graft. You know, we're working from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 a.m. in the morning for long periods of time. Where, you know, there was a period where I hadn't had dinner with my wife for close to 3 months.
Wow.
It was critical, business critical. But look, that was a stage in my life. I look back on it, I reflect on it. Fondly, it's been done. We received that funding, and then over the next 2 years, we built a mine site and a processing plant and a railway line and a port facility. You know, we're talking $8 billion, $9 billion of funding to build that. And once that was built, it was my role as a leader for finance to support that from a financial perspective. So what are we doing for mining? How much are we actually mining? How much is it costing us? What could we do better? How's this processing plant, which is worth $6 billion, how are we maintaining that? What about railway lines? How fast are the locos going? How much fuel are we using? And port, the most important facility. How much are we getting onto those ships and how much are we shipping through? So look, I've done that for a number of years. That's my background in terms of who we are, what we do, how we do things.
Right. So there's a better than average chance you can read a P&L.
I've been known to in the past. Been known to in the past, but you know, I could tell you whatever story you want to hear.
I mean, I must admit, that's one of the things which I find really interesting speaking with a lot of business owners is that basic P&L is some of the skills we don't have, but That's okay. We can get to that on another day, perhaps. Now, with that sort of background, that has got nothing to do with what you're doing now. I mean, obviously, business services is business services, and understanding how a business runs, the components, all the little cogs in the machine, so to speak, are really important. But how do you go from building mind science in the middle of the Pilbara to healthcare services?
So when I first came to Australia, I actually worked for ECU Health. So for 2 years, I was involved in a number of strategic projects, which included items such as the Wanneroo Super Clinic, looking at student placements, etc. But the fundamental objective was to provide healthcare to the community. Now, when you do that as a role, it's great. You can go in, you can look at it, you can take part in it. However, closer to home, my mother suffered a stroke 5 years ago, or 2012, so 6 years ago. From a personal view, you know, that was the most emotionally challenging period of my life I've been through. My parents live with us. We decided when we moved from the UK to buy a house together, and we bought a place together. I haven't lived with my parents for 15 years, and so that's a different story.
But look, so all of a sudden you've changed countries. But it's nice to have a support structure.
Yeah, that was great. But look, we were having Sunday dinner, you know, 6 o'clock, 6:30. She's just finished dinner, going to the bathroom, and you know, she's starting to slur her words. Her leg is dragging on the floor, and look, you see the signs of these things, but when you see them actually in front of you, we knew immediate action was required.
So it must be absolutely terrifying.
It's scary, but you know, even at the same time, you need to get to a hospital. So we went to a hospital, went to emergency ward, and she was admitted amazingly quickly. She was lying there on a trolley, and she was absolutely terrified. My mother was 60 years old at the time. She worked for a department store, a store called Sainsbury's in the UK, which is like a Woolies. And she used to lead the bakery department. So she's a real jovial lady who enjoys communicating with people. But seeing her absolutely petrified lying on this trolley was an eye-opening moment. Now, what happened then was, over a period of time, we found out, you know, analysis is always great after the event, but we found that she had a blood clot at the back of her neck. The specialist told us that if we operate on that blood clot, there was a 99% chance of death.
So, wow, that's a not sign the form sort of kind of thing, isn't it?
Look, you know, if I take you through what we're going through, we're having Sunday dinner, and within the space of 4 days, my mother's in hospital. We're talking about life-changing impacts here. Mm. So, you know, my mother went through an amazingly emotional time. We went through the same thing, but what she was going through was absolutely challenging. She was in hospital for a period of time. Over that period of time, she received tremendous support from the doctors, from the physios, from the occupational therapists, from all of the support staff. And, you know, all I can say is, look, what they provided was was way beyond what we would expect. She came home after a period of 3 to 4 months. And, you know, we received a lot of support from our local GPs, from a lot of the local physiotherapists, the occupational therapists outside the hospitals. Now, this was an absolutely mind-blowing event. You know, she's going through this. I'm quite close to my mother. I'm looking at her, seeing this, and I'm looking around, thinking, "Wow, how can we be in this situation?" The other side of me is, you know, if I'm very honest, we're looking at this absolutely mind-blowing event, and I don't want to accept it. So, what do? I revert to type. I start looking at how the hospital's been run. I start looking at and observing things like, "Well, there's a lot of staff here. Sorry, there's a lot of patients, but there's not enough staff. These staff don't seem to have time to be able to even talk to these patients." You know, the one thing my mother really required at the time was a lot of support, emotional support. You know, I could be there for 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, but when you're alone with your thoughts, what you really want to do is talk to someone. Mm. And what I now know, after my mom's told me, she didn't want to burden any of their family with the thoughts going through her mind. Well, how is this going to impact her? Is she going to survive? What does this mean for her long term? What sort of life will she have? Who does she ask those questions to? Mm. I don't have the answers. If she asks me, she knows I'm going to be worried. If she asks my father, she knows he'll be worried. So these questions, these thoughts she's having, the only people she can really talk to is the support staff, the nurses. But, you know, with the ratios there are in hospitals, with the amount of patients going through and really the level of support required, you know, that's only a brief conversation she can have. So that was 5 years ago. You know, over a period of a lot of rehab, a lot of real strength shown from her side, she was able to, you know, from a standing point of 30% mobility on her right hand side, she was able to bring that up to 60%.
Wow, that's a huge. I guess the things going through your head when in a situation like that are going to be, I don't want to be a burden on my family. Is it, you know, how much of this is short term? How much of it is long term? What's permanent? You know, am I going to be able to feed myself? I can't. If I couldn't speak, I'd go. My husband would probably be very happy, but I would go completely bonkers if I wasn't able to communicate like that. And if she's such a large personality, and just even that ability taken away would just be such. Well, how would you know even where to start recovering from that?
And look, I understand about emotional intelligence, about connecting with people, but we all know there's items that we keep buried deep down, our deepest thoughts, you know, our deepest fears. What does this mean for me? How am I going to do this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a really strong family support here and a lot of friends. And, you know, the support she received was phenomenal. But again, and I emphasize the point, the support she received from the staff, the occupational therapists, the physios, all the people she came in contact with, well, was phenomenal. They went above and beyond what was required. Mm. So that was my mother 5 years ago. Last year in 2017, in June, we went to Bali for two weddings. So we had 10 days of, you know, family get together and lots of weddings, etc. And it was fantastic. Now on the way back at Bali airport, she slipped on the escalator and broke a leg.
Oh, gracious.
So, you know,
and was that as a result of some of the disabilities she was continuing to carry from the stroke?
So she's at mobility of right hand side of 60%, and she's careful of a number of things. But the airport at Bali, you know, is a little bit up. There's a slope, etc. So all these factors fell in, and it was a bit wet, but she fell and broke her leg. Now, the doctor at Bali Airport was like, oh, it's only a strain, get it on the plane, etc.
You are not my problem, you are not part of my healthcare system. Yeah.
Well, as she came here and, you know, we arrived at 1 o'clock in the morning and she went straight to Princess Royal. And, Royal Perth, sorry. And, you know, we found out that, again, she'd broken her leg, that she then needed a metal plate put in. Mm-hmm. And, any patients that are in hospitals actually cost a lot to the taxpayer. So she stayed there for 2 weeks and then was moved to a rehab centre. Mm-hmm. And then she, because of her age, now she's over 65, she's moved to an aged care facility and transition home. And again, this was another watershed moment for myself. You know, she's getting a lot of support, etc., etc. But all of these items I've observed before, you know, the number of carers for patients, the type of facilities, where the facilities were, the type of food, etc. Look, you know, aged care homes get a bad reputation. We only hear the bad things, but what we don't see is the amount of pressure that these carers are under and the type of support they provide. Absolutely phenomenal support. The biggest item I saw, though, was, you know, in an aged care home, I was seeing a number of clients or customers with only one carer. And these carers are a bit of a generalization. These carers are generally from overseas, being paid a low rate, but yet we're asking them at our most critical stage of our life to look after the ones we love.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and people have different sort of disabilities, or aging impacts people differently. So some people need support with their daily activities, going to the bathroom, caring, looking after themselves, going to the washroom, etc.
Being able to feed themselves with any sort of efficiency.
Correct.
Of course, if your nutrition is poor, then of course everything else that you've got just sort of snowballs from there.
And yet there's another patient who might actually just need some support going to the dining room. Mm. Now, these carers are trying to do many things. What I observed was there was just not enough carers. Not enough carers for the customers who required them, for the people who really needed their support. And going into an aged care residential home, you know, and we'll talk about aged care later on, but aged care residential, that is such an emotional time in people's lives. You know, they've reached a point where they can't stay at home. They're no longer able to look after themselves at home. Mm. And they're going through an emotional stage where they're actually moving out of their home where they've grown up, where they've raised their children, where they've got attachments, to a new facility, a completely different experience late in life.
But I guess that moving also, you're going from a situation, though you might have reached a point where you can't perhaps cope with that situation anymore, everything in your home is in your control.
Yeah.
When you choose to eat, what you choose to eat, are you going to go to bed now or later? Are you going to sit in the lounge room? Are you going to sit in the dining room? Moving into a facility, and as liberal and as fantastic as they can be, They have to have a system. They can only serve one dinner time. And so you're also giving away part of your control of your life as you make that transition. And I must admit, as a control freak myself, that I'm going to find that really, really challenging. I'm likely to do something completely stupid between now and then and actually not get to that stage of my life. But you're talking about more here, aren't you, in this situation? You're talking about a group of staff that are desperately trying to do the best job they do, because let's face it, people don't go into aged care and health care for the money in Australia. Granted, it's more highly paid than some areas overseas, but it's not a way to create an investment portfolio for yourself, is it? It's you do it because something in you says this is what I do, this is who I am, and this is how I give back to my life. So you've got that in combination with a group of people who's already feeling partly out of control through disability or through just purely the fact that their body's going, you know what, you've mistreated me for a number of years here now, look, you know, happy to think straight, but I'm not so good on the walking.
Yeah.
And you combine all these things together in a facility, and you get, well, I would imagine in some instances, potential chaos and such conflict, or the potential for such conflict.
And, you know, the key there is the front line of that facility is the carers.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, how are you supporting those carers? How are you training them to deal with this emotional challenge? On one side, we're asking them to be carers and look after our loved ones. On the other side, we're asking them to look after 20 people and do this task and do that task, etc. So,
and know what's important to each person and treat them as an individual. I don't want my mum treated like she's one of a set of, you know, of sheep or an individual sheep in a flock. I want you to know her name. I want you to know what she likes. And
yeah, and that's and if we take that a little bit further, look at ourselves now. Mm. We're all individuals. We've all got our own personalities. We all know what telco plan we want and what we want to watch on Foxtel and what we're watching on Netflix. So we make our own choices.
Absolutely.
And we're going fast forward that 20 years. We're going to take that with us. So these facilities have got to change and be able to look after what we want. We want this plan. We want to be able to watch this on Netflix or on Foxtel or whatever our, you know, poison is. But, you know, we want to be able to do this. So a lot of these facilities, there's some for profit and not for profit. But a lot of these organisations are, you know, looking to treat our elderly, our aged ones with love and respect, but then they're limited. They're limited by the first of all, the revenue they receive from firstly the government, but also the type of fees they can charge as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we talk about aged care homes. Okay, we've spoken about revenue. The next stage is, where can they look out there for their costs? What can they do with their costs? Well, they're already having people on, you know, from different backgrounds, lowly paid. They're looking at bringing new initiatives in. They've already started looking at how can they improve their costs? Where can they get their supplies from? Who's making dinner? What can they bring in house? What can they, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's a real conundrum there in terms of, we've only got this money to use. How do we use that?
Mm. Is that why we've seen just a little bit in Perth recently? And it surprised me when I heard the advert. I thought, what a great initiative. And then I thought more deeply about it as to what was driving perhaps that initiative. And it's one of the aged care, it's not so much an aged care facility, but I think it's a retirement village type, you know, the independent living, but we're all sort of kind of going to independently live together. And they've started to have open days. And you get, you know, for X number of dollars, you join the residents for lunch. And then you get to obviously to learn a bit more about the facility, and you're encouraged to obviously bring your young children so they can have that sort of kind of interaction, which of course is very important to the quality of life for some of these people. But it was visit for lunch, stay for something. I can't remember what the byline was now. But it was seemed to be, when I thought about it, almost a revenue raising thing. And maybe that is part of the reason that's been there. It improves the quality of life for their residents. But also it gives them an ability, some extra funds for maybe some of these projects.
And what it also does, you know, quite crucially there is it raises the visibility of the retirement villages as well.
Right.
Everyone's getting older, and it, depending on your stage in life and your quality of life and your health, that will determine what you decide to do going forward. If you're able to, and you know the preferred option by all the experts, by all the leaders, by the government is that you stay at home. You stay at home if you're able to, for as long as you can. If you're unable to go and do the shopping, there's help available for that.
Of course, yes.
If you can't get around to doing the gardening and if you don't want to clean the pool, well, there's maybe help for that as well.
Absolutely.
But the next stage of that is, well, if you can't stay at home, a retirement village is an option. along with going into an aged care residential home. But there's a number of different steps that we need to go through. They all have their advantages, they all have their disadvantages. They also have their own costs, etc., which is quite challenging as well to understand. And coming from a finance background, when my mother was in the transition home last year, it was absolutely amazing for me to understand, to say that, you know what, I have no idea what we're supposed to do in aged care. There's numerous websites which give you partial information, websites which don't give you all the information, websites which are slightly out of date. But if you Google aged care, you know, there's lots of websites which with conflicting information. So if I'm struggling with a finance background to find this, someone who's under emotional pressure at the time, and let's be honest about it, who plans for aged care?
Yeah, and who obviously doesn't have your already established understanding and depth of knowledge in the area, you wouldn't know where to start. So is this gap in the market that you identified?
So what does insight do?
Absolutely.
So I'm taking my background of business improvement, continuous improvement. My speciality is planning and then implementing that. So what are we doing? How are we going to do that? And let's make it happen. Now, my business is focused on working with leaders of aged care and healthcare to improve their services, to look at what they're doing in current operations with a fresh pair of eyes. You know, I come from a different background. I come from a no-nonsense background, because Mrs. Reinhardt wouldn't take any nonsense.
No, absolutely.
But also, I come from an empathetic background. You know, my mother's gone through this.
You've been there, absolutely.
So what can they do as an organisation to improve this? And what we're seeing over the last 2 to 3 years, there's a lot of deregulation that's occurred in the market. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of organisations which have started up which just haven't existed before. New home care organisation. And I've spoken about this before. You know, home care is where the market's going to be. If I look at aged care overall as a market, in the next 40 years, the market's going to double from 3.8 million people over the age of 65 to 8 million people plus.
Wow.
8 million people. So, you know, the market's more than doubling.
And I guess people are living longer as well. So it's not just a case of you're over that age for, you know, 5 or 6 years. People are living into their 90s and later.
Correct.
With obviously better nutrition as children, and then better work environments, less pollutants, better healthcare, all those things go to contribute into obviously the mortality and the mortality rates of our population.
Correct. And look, and it's a great thing for our population to age, but also it puts an immense strain on our health system and our aged care system. So the government is looking at a number of different ways of changing that. And one of the earliest indications is home care is the way forward. You know, they're going to be looking at reducing potentially funding going forward. But going forward, home care is what they will be promoting. So stay at home as long as you can. We'll help you with that. And to take advantage of that, there's a lot of new home care organisations starting up.
Right, okay.
And, you know, if I just carry on about the overall aged care market, so people are, you know, it's more than doubling in size. The baby boom generation is now coming through to the age of retirement.
That's true, yes, of course.
So the generation who are used to having their own way, who've had choices, who can choose their own telco plan, et cetera, internet savvy. Now, they've grown up in a period where they're bringing along different sort of diseases. So chronic diseases, type 2 diabetes, mental health's on the rise. Mm. Dementia's increasing, Alzheimer's increasing. And what this means is our workforce, our aged care population, aged care carers have got to change going forward. So no longer can the unskilled carer who's looking after 20 people be able to do that. They've got to have specific skill sets to look after different sections. So my business supports those leaders to create positive outcomes. And by creating positive outcomes, it's focused on helping the customers, the patients going through the system, helping those organisations deliver the best service that they can to those people who need them at the time when they need them.
Okay. So say I was the CEO or the decision maker within one of the new groups which is coming along board. And I'm going, radio call. Obviously, I can get government funding, a bit like childcare centres used to be years ago. Everybody was, they were springing up everywhere because all of a sudden they were the next best thing and funding was available. And I imagine so I think several businesses, especially service industries, go through these cycles when all of a sudden the government decides there's funding available here and perhaps we get some great businesses start and perhaps some which aren't as wonderful as they perhaps could be because of the market. So let's say we're going to be one of those businesses which is genuinely cares, has seen a niche in the market, much like you have done with Insight, and you've gone, radio, but I want to get some help with this. I want to understand how I can improve my services better. So what sorts of things could you say to me as a business leader, if I'm in that position where I want to make sure that my services are the best, what sort of things do you look for?
Yeah, so first of all, the most important item is, what is our vision? And are we living up to our vision? So everyone's vision is, we treat all of our customers with respect and dignity. That's a fantastic, powerful vision.
Absolutely, and it can be applied to any of our service industries.
Correct.
But it does sound a little bit like a motherhood statement.
It does, but if we take it down the next step, which is our power, you know, we're treating all of our customers with respect and dignity. What are our frontline staff doing? Mm-hmm. And that's the real test.
So that's that, okay, this is your vision, but what does that look like at each piece of your, what does it look like in accounts? What does it look like in purchasing? What does it look like in the person who comes in and looks after you in your room? So that's what you're helping
Correct.
With, translating that vision?
So it's taking that vision and making it into an operational vision. So what does that really mean? Now, Insight focuses on a number of different core areas for the business. Mm-hmm. And again, the overall objective of my organization is to improve the customer experience.
Okay. So it's nice what you're doing in the boardroom, but it's what Nana's finding on a day-to-day basis in her room.
So
that's
my
important.
Mother, your mother, someone's sister, someone's daughter. You know, this is quite personal, as you can hear from my voice. But
absolutely.
But which means it's meaningful.
And that's what drives improvement and innovation, is that personal engagement with why we do what we do. And the number of people I have, or number of business owners where I have this conversation, they're selling widgets. But nobody in their business knows why they're selling widgets.
Yeah.
Or in fact, they've forgotten why they're selling the widget to start with, except it's how they put food on the table at the end of the day. I think if we can, as business owners, reconnect back to our, what gets me out of bed in the morning, it's so much more satisfying with
Right.
the way that we run our business, and it makes for a better business and so much of a better service for our clients.
And, you know, that why, what, who we are, what do we exist for, that is such a fundamental business driver.
Mm.
Without that really, and from my opinion, without clearly specified and really clarified in your own mind, unless you really believe that, then, you know, you could, how long will your business survive
for? Don't work for Woolworths, or Sainsbury's in this case.
Yeah. My organization focuses on a number of key areas.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, who are our workforce? What are they doing? Who are they? What skill levels do they have? And are they the workforce that we require now for the next 3 years, the 5 years, 10 years? So it's that strategic planning around our workforce, making sure that we can bring the right people on at the right time. The next side of this, and the most important side around the workforce, is how do they engage with our customers? You know, a smile from a carer can go a long way in someone's life. And it's bringing that along. You know, a carer is, you know, we're not talking about robots here, we're talking about individual people who have real problems themselves. They've got to do the daycare drop-off, they've got to go and pay the bills, etc. So everyone has their own issues, their problems. It's how do we create an environment where they're happy and, you know, willing to come to work for, and how do we get that across to our customers?
I'm just thinking back to something you said right at the beginning when your mum was first in hospital, and how she, with all of the issues that she had going on, all the questions she had, all that fear, that she didn't feel that she could speak with you or with your father or really anybody close to the family because she didn't want to worry them. These same issues are being experienced by these people, all of these people in these homes. So as you say, that ability to have the smile, to have enough time in the day to perhaps share that conversation and to genuinely remember what's going on in their lives, that would be a game changer, surely, on the quality of care that we're able to offer these people.
Well, it'll certainly improve customer satisfaction.
Oh. And you're not talking about putting little smiley faces or sad faces on an iPad here. We're talking about genuine, I have an improved quality of life because where I am and the staff that it has genuinely give a damn about me.
Correct. And so knowing that you're in a safe environment, that you're being looked after by people who care about you, oh, that's tremendous, absolutely tremendous.
So how does working with these business leaders help them improve that, take the business? Because I would have thought that dignity of care or being treated with dignity is not just a nice to have, it's a fundamental, should be a fundamental right as a human being.
And a lot of these leaders, a lot of these organizations are working towards that.
Mm.
But they've come from a culture where they're, you know, blinded by what's going on in the industry.
Mm.
They're blinded by, they look around, they see what their peers are doing. So what my business does is provide fresh ideas, fresh perspectives. What are we looking at here? How could we do this differently? And that's why it's so great having new organizations join the aged care industry. The more solutions out there, the better overall the market will get.
Because they challenge the status quo, absolutely.
Correct. So the first one is, you know, my organization looks at the customers and this and the workforce. The next one is, how do they deliver their services? Mm-hmm. Now, I spoke earlier about, you know, their time pool, they're running around trying to help this person, that person. Well, you know, what can we do around that? Do we bring on more staff? If it's a not-for-profit organization, you know, surely care is what there. So what can we do around that? Do we bring on more staff? Do we bring on specialist staff to look after specialist type patients or customers? What can we do to improve that service delivery as an organization? What type of services do we want to deliver? Mm. Do we want to support mental health? How do we support type 2 diabetes? How do we support chronic diseases? So again, that's a different viewpoint of how do we do that. So how we do that is just as important as who's going to do that.
Right.
We also look at governance. So, you know, governance for the aged care is absolutely paramount, making sure that patient safety is up there, but also providing the best services that are up there.
I mean, just as you were saying that recent stories we've had about where we've had actually court cases in Australia recently where they've been the abuse of people. It just, to me, that's absolutely mind-blowing that you could have a situation where the carer is either stealing from or physically assaulting or verbally assaulting their clients. But I guess we're talking a very high-stress situation. And if you've got, let's think about our own home lives, or even our business lives, but our home lives, where you might have a child who's coming to that 2 or 3 years old and you're just going, really, no is not the only word that you know. Surely, and you get that frustration. And I think anybody gets to a point where they snap and you just lose your temper or lose the plot or just have to step away. And the pressure that we've got some of these staff under, from what you were saying, is huge.
What you're describing there is no excuse for elder abuse. Absolutely no excuse.
Okay,
I mean, it's from a personal view, so what, you're having a bad day? Does that rationalize you abusing someone who's vulnerable or stealing from them? But that comes from, you know, all of that comes from different factors.
What I'm saying is we see that, and I can imagine, if Insight was working with us as an aged care, with your new ideas, with your innovations, and saying, look, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? I would find that incredibly valuable, whether I was a new, just getting to know it, the industry type of person, or as someone who'd been working in this industry for a long time, because I think, like any business, you've got, but you put the blinkers on, you go, this is the way we've always done it and I know it works, and I would love to have the time to think of something imaginative, but I've just got to get through today. And that's why, if we can all possibly do it, yell for the outside help, which is what Insight is providing.
Yeah, and my organisation's an independent organisation.
Yeah, you don't have alliances with anybody other than the end user who is desperately seeking to be treated better.
And we have, unfortunately, my mining background, which allows me to call a spade a spade.
You know, not a digger. Yes, got it.
Yeah. Or a dozer, or whatever we want to talk about. But, you know, with that mining background, it gives me a fresh perspective of big things, but also the little things. More importantly, it's independent. I'm not tied into that organisation. I'm not part of their culture. Mm. Therefore, I haven't got the history that a lot of organisations have. I'm not a large consulting company or a boutique consultancy. This is what I do. I don't do hundreds of other things. What I focus on is business improvement with a finance hat on. With my background, my skills, and my experience of looking at operations and making a tangible difference, this is why I focused on aged care. Now, my business also focuses on healthcare, aged care and healthcare. So healthcare is more working closely with GPs and practice managers to improve that first line of healthcare. So whenever we're ill, and I'll talk from personal experience here, I've got a young daughter who's 21 months, and since she's been born, geez, we go to the doctors on a monthly basis. So we're on great terms there. But, you know, the GPs are our first line of healthcare. The support they provide, you know, from my view, is undervalued. You know, we go to the GPs when we have issues, but if you think of from their side, they're looking at many people. They're dealing with lots of customers lots of patients on a daily basis. You know, some of them are good stories, some of them are bad stories. You know, they're referring them on to specialists, et cetera, et cetera. Another part of my business is working with GPs and practice managers, again, to improve that experience there. So looking at what is their practice doing? What's the customer experience? Who is their workforce? Their service delivery? How do they deliver their services? their governance, their clinical governance, their patient safety. But more importantly, and you know, we've spoken about patients, but the other side is the people who provide these services. From my experience at working with a number of GPs, a lot of these GPs are close to burnout. You know, it's high pressured, it's high stressed. And my organization looks at a couple of different things there. First of all being, what do you really want from your business? What do you want from your practice? Is it to be able to deal with lots of customers? Is it to provide the best healthcare? Or is it to make as much money as you want to? Is it a financial gain that you're looking at? And from there, we're able to break that down to actually, what does that mean in terms for them? So if it's a work-life balance, well, and a quality of service delivery, it's going back to basics and saying, well, hold on, to actually do that, you could actually change your model. You can change the number of patients you see on a daily basis. This is the type of workforce you want to bring in. And if I go back to my own experience, when I take my daughter in to see the GP, so she'd be due for another checkup in 2 weeks or something. It's amazing, after going to daycare, the amount of time she goes to the doctor as well. It's phenomenal.
It's okay, because it's building her immune system. She's going to thank you later in life.
I love that explanation. I'll keep that. I'll record that myself. But, you know, going into a practice, what a difference it makes when you go to the receptionist. She says hello. She tells you the doctor's 5-10 minutes late, because they're never early. They're always late.
Yep.
And it's nice and clean facility.
And when was the last time you went in? Oh, yeah, no worries at all. He's expecting you. Go right in. This is not a country practice here.
No. So look, so the healthcare is a big part of my organisation. And it's not just healthcare. It's also looking not just GP practices, but it's also chiropractors, physios, occupational therapists, all of those services, those allied health services that support healthy aging.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But just listening to you talk, I know that you're talking healthcare, and I know that you've niched these skills down from mining into healthcare and aged care, which I think is phenomenal, because we really do need, we've walked into some shocking places, and what you're describing sounds like a very utopic view of what's going on, because I can tell, I think everybody can tell stories of where it hasn't been so fantastic.
But if I stop you there, just 2 moments. You went on holiday, you went on to TripAdvisor,
Yep. You
choose the best, hotel. Yeah?
Probably, yes.
So why can't we have, that's what we choose to do. So going into a practice is no different. It's just
that's
an extension
true.
Of ourselves.
That's what I can hear you talking about here, and it's not, while it's still healthcare, those same principles can be applied to any business that we're looking at. That what is your vision? Why is it here? How does that translate into how every single touch point in our business works with our clients?
Correct.
Phenomenal. So if people would like to get hold of you, either for a coffee, because I guess you're always up for a chat, same as me, or they are working in a practice like this that they would like to assistance with, they know someone who's working in a practice who could probably require your assistance, what's the best way for them to get hold of you, Samir?
So I've got a, contact me via my website.
Sure.
www.insights, spelled with an E, so ENSIGHTBUS, so insidebus.com.au. That will provide my email address and my mobile number.
Fantastic.
And look, I'm more than happy to meet anyone for a coffee or for a juice or whatever their fancy is.
But of course, we can't assume coffee these days, especially since you're working in healthcare.
But healthcare is something that we all take for granted, and they make such a fundamental difference to our lives. Aged care is something that we should be planning for and thinking about now. Making those informed decisions now will help us going forward. I'm more than happy to provide any guidance or support or answer any sort of general questions.
Fantastic. Okay, so we know how to get hold of you. We'll pop them in the show notes as well, so that people can do the click thing, because, of course, they're all driving at the moment and listening adamantly. We don't want people stopping and writing things down at lights. Parting words of brilliance from a business owner's point of view or from a healthcare point of view. If these guys could just do one thing, all these healthcare and aged care workers could just do one thing tomorrow to make a difference, what would you recommend it to be?
Well, I'm going to take liberty of what you've just said. I'm going to say two things.
Two things? Okay, go for your life.
Remember that they've got people's lives and happiness in their hands. And the most important thing they can do right now is give someone a smile. Who knows the impact of that smile?
You can change the world. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. Brilliant to catch up with you. Hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you very much.
for joining us on District 32 Radio. I hope you found a few pearls of takeaway wisdom in that interview. If you'd like any further information about the interview, about District 32 in general, or to simply rummage through the interview archive, then please feel free to drop by the website, which is district32.com.au, or you can send us an email to info@district32.com.au. Have a terrific rest of your day.